Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 and Hummel's Wharf. An action-packed show today. Today we'll take you back to the bowling alley where it all happened to see if he can pick up the last two pins. No? Not the action we're looking for?
Going to stay 298, Steve.
Mr. 298.
That's right.
Like Danny Cater's batting average. All right.
But hey, I would swap my 259 for a 298. I would do that. I hit a 259 in high school in Saturday morning junior league. That goes back, oh my goodness, early 80s. That's when I hit my peak. In bowling, anyway.
Well, unfortunately, 298's when somebody hit their peak in life. I mean, it's just, after that, it was all downhill.
The burning question is, with this 298, what was, I don't think, did he ever tell you the two pins that were left? Was it like the 1-2 or the 7-10?
No.
That would be frustrating if it was the
7-10. Now, number one, I can't do what he did. I mean, so the fact that he even did it's remarkable.
Yes.
But we have fun at his expense over it. Only for the simple reason it tortures him. But in terms of his ability to do it and my ability to do it, I don't think. If you go out and you have a three-game series, okay, I don't know if I could bowl 298 for three games, let alone one. I mean, so he's exponentially better than I am, but again, he came up short, failure. All right, so...
That's like in racing. You know what happens when you're in second place? You're the first loser.
If you're not first, you're last.
Ricky Bobby.
Ricky Bobby, you're not first, you might as well be last. All right. Today, Mark Wogenrich, Allentown Morning Call at 3:35. Neil Coulong at 4:06. Sam Fortier from the Washington Post on the Nationals at 4:35. Tomorrow, Matt McGloin is on the show. Friday, Jack Ham will join us on the show. So there you go. Well, figure we'd go that direction. We also force all the broadcast partners this week to, all right, I'll do your show. So that's what we have. All right? And... it is, of course, the whiteout game. The Yankee game, by the way, with the Astros tonight in the Bronx already has been postponed. They will not play it tonight because of the weather. I mean, when I came into the Sunbury Motor Studio here, it was pouring outside. And this is moving east. It's moving east and northeast, essentially. So they already know they can't play tonight. So they will play game four tomorrow at 8:08. It's going to be colder. It's going to be very windy, too. It also probably will change what Aaron Boone and A.J. Hinch do as the managers. Both had talked about the possibility of this being bullpen day on each side. Now you can bring back, if you're A.J. Hinch, Zach Greinke on regular rest for game four. Now if you are Aaron Boone, you have the possibility of Tanaka. Masahiro Tanaka you can bring back on regular rest. So let's see if that changes their thought process going into Game 4 since now they know Game 4 is tomorrow night. The Nationals are in. Sam Fortier, Washington Post, joins us in the final half hour today. And then there's a college football game here on Saturday. Did you hear that?
Oh, cool. When is it? Who are they playing?
Exactly.
Well, it's like with Jim Brandstetter, who was on the show yesterday. And by the way, if you missed the interview, catch our podcast on iTunes, Apple Podcast App, Google Play. It's like right before we turn Jim over to you. He goes, yeah, Steve, he's play-by-play announcer, right?
I'm just the curator. Oh, my goodness. So, that'll be Saturday. I did talk to Chris Fowler briefly today, and he was driving in when I talked to him today, and he's revved up about this. He loves the whiteout. He loves the atmosphere of it. I asked him, I said, does it show the health of college football? I said, look, you get the big game of the week every week, so I understand that. But when you see stuff like this, what you saw at LSU last week, he says, I don't know if it tells the health of it. He said, but, you know, because I told him that Jack and I have been at Kinnick. And I said, Jack said to me before the game, that's how I prefaced this to Chris Fowler. I said, Jack said, look, they said, you don't get this in the pros. Right? You know, and we agreed on that. But he loves the whiteout. And it's going to be a big part of the broadcast, the whiteout, because it does bring weather. He said, the funny thing is, he said, some places do. We're going to do a blackout. He says, to be honest with you, it looks terrible on TV. It looks terrible in the stadium. It looks terrible on TV. This is the whiteout. Whoa. He says, it's bright. You can see it. He said, it's exciting. And I thought that was a good point. And this will be Chris's second game in Beaver Stadium this year. He was here for the Pitt game. Remember how he and Sean McDonough switched spots so Sean could be honored up at Syracuse? So he'll be doing that. Joe Maddon's new manager of the Angels. Already several Philly fans have expressed on our Facebook page how they're happy he's not going to be managing the Phillies. Here's a name that came up. Chase Utley. Huh? Chase Utley. That name came up. What do you think of that?
Yeah, if there was a... I saw, like, when the news came down last Wednesday of Gabe's departure, I did see a preliminary list. I think there was at least 7 or 8 names on that list. Chase was on the list, and the other one was Aruly Banez. And actually, Joe Giglio, when we had him on the show last week...
Brought up Banez.
Yeah, he brought that name up, too.
I
found that to be interesting.
Well, I thought it interesting because I think to be the manager, you have to have some experience.
I just wonder if Aaron Boone was currently not the manager of the Yankees, would those names be in the mix?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good question. I don't know what the answer to that is. I mean, you have to convince them you know analytics and blah, 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 blah. I know you have to do all that. But I don't know. And I think you're right. I mean, if it wasn't for Aaron Boone, would some of these guys have shots at it? I mean, Aaron Boone doesn't have any managerial experience. Yet he's won back-to-back 100... He's had back-to-back 100-win seasons. I'll be honest with you, he hasn't done a lot that I've looked at and said, oh, that's a bad move. I think he's done the best he can do with the people he has. I mean, you take other people like Alex Cora. Alex Cora was at least the bench coach in Houston when the year the Astros won it, you know, working side-by-side with A.J. Hinch. So, he's had that kind of experience. I look at a guy like that I know, Ollie Marmol, was the State College Spikes manager for 2 years. Well, he's now the bench coach with Mike Schilt in St. Louis. I mean, Ollie, you can just see Ollie is positioning himself through his hard work and the confidence the Cardinals have in him to one day be a major league manager. And you get that by being a bench coach. Do you get it Being a famous name? I don't know. I mean, Utley would be popular, but I don't know.
Utley would be very popular, and it just makes you wonder, due to that popularity, if he would get off to a slow start, if he would get the skipper position, how long would he get a pass?
Oh, I don't know. I think number one, if you're in that, say you're in the spot, say for example they did it. I don't think they will, but say for example they did it. All right. The number one thing he has to do is he has to hire himself a bench coach. Okay. Where the bench coach comes in and the bench coach is a big help to what's going on. Now, I think that becomes, okay, I can see what they're doing here and why they're doing it. So, I don't know. This is, somebody mentioned that name today. I was looking at it. What the heck? They want to do what? With who? I mean, I could see if they hired him to be a coach. So you get a feeling for what it's like to be on that side of it in the dugout. And so forth. But I don't know. That doesn't, that wouldn't make sense to me. But as you mentioned, Aaron Boone may have opened the door for that kind of hire. We'll find out. But they don't have a manager yet, but to their credit, they don't have a game coming up either.
Nor do the Pirates. Which team will get a manager first?
That's a good question.
Now that Madden's gone, and that was to be expected, he was going to go to the Angels since he had multiple decades of, you know, connection to that franchise. So I just wonder now with the managerial domino effect, if it's going to, you know, really start to pick up here over the next few days or close to a week.
Hard to tell. You know what? That's hard to tell. I mean, normally I would say, oh, yeah, fine. No big deal. Because when you look at the... I doubt they're going after the same people, so it's not... I think that's part of it, too. And, you know, say there's a hot name out there and everybody's going after the same person. Okay. I could see that. But I don't know, is it they're going after the same person? They also have different goals, too. The Phillies are trying to close the gap in Atlanta and Washington. On the other side of it, there's Pittsburgh. They're trying to close the gap on fourth. Not exactly a great goal. All right, back with more in a moment. Mark Wogenrich coming up today. Also coming up on the show today will be Sam Fortier, Washington Post, and Neil Kulong today on your beloved Steelers. Still beloved, right?
Absolutely. Till we take our last breath. No fair weather fan here.
It's funny because I brought this up to the suit and I was trying to figure out whether he was trying to convince me or himself. All right, back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Penn State Nittany Lions play on WKOK.
Myers delivers near side, picked up, 3, 30, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown Penn State. John Reed takes it to the house, and the Nittany Lions retake the lead.
Penn State football is sponsored by Blaze Alexander Ford, Carpet Man, Mifflinburg Auto Sales, Glick Associates, Mifflinburg Hotel, Scarlet D, and Lewisburg Hotel. You can hear Penn State football on WKOK and WKOK.com.
Thank you. Great to have you with us on the show today. Mark Wogenrich on Penn State football next half hour. Neil Coulong on the Steelers next half hour. Final half hour is Sam Fortier and the Nationals getting to their first ever World Series. Sweeping the Cardinals. And they await, the World Series will start on Tuesday. And they'll face either the Yankees or the Astros. The Astros lead 2-1, but they will not play tonight. And because of the rain, they'll play tomorrow at 8:08. Friday was supposed to be a travel day. Now they'll play Game 5 at 7:08. And then they'll go to Houston. So that's what they have coming up. I believe there's a college football game tonight. I think Troy's playing tonight, aren't they? Yeah, we're starting to get that transition where we get to mid-October. And then I think right around November, the first week of November, we start getting college football every night of the week. Not Monday, of course, but I'm talking about Tuesday, Wednesday. Some of those Mid-American Conference games start taking place on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. And you get to Thursday, you still got your Friday game. Now, this week, the Friday game in college football is Northwestern Ohio State. Northwestern's really struggling to score. You have to be able to score if you're playing Ohio State, because their offense puts up a boatload of points. They're very hard to hold down. I give Michigan State credit for a quarter. They held them down, and then the avalanche happened. But look what's happening at Michigan State. Have you heard about this? They've had four players now put their name into the transfer portal. Four. They already had Connor Hayward, Ladarius Jefferson, two running backs put their name in. Then Weston Bridges, who's a wide receiver, put his name in. And then Brian Bouye-Randall, linebacker, he started against Penn State last year, put his name in this week. Well, Michigan State has a bye week, by the way. Penn State will play there next week at 3:30. We'll be on at 2 for that, but that's a week from now. But now you're looking at the transfer portal in the middle of a season. Kelly Bryant did it last year with Clemson. Four games. Sorry, we're going to turn to Trevor Lawrence. He leaves. Now he's at Missouri. You're seeing this year more and more players in the middle of the season trickle into the transfer portal. We are in completely different and amazing times in college football. Some really positive, some of it eyebrow-raising. But we're not used to it, so maybe that's why we're raising the eyebrows. But it's amazing. I'm trying to do a little bit of research ahead. I'm looking at Michigan State going, transfer. What the heck? In the middle of the year. Guys get passed out, don't like it, decide to leave. Mark Wogenrich, Allentown Morning Call, next half hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our great friends at Sunbury Motors.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Neil Coulong, USA Today, next half hour. Sam Fortier on the Nationals from the Washington Post in the final half hour. Matt McGloin on the show tomorrow. And Jack Ham on Friday. Now we bring in one of the truly outstanding beat writers. Does a fabulous job for the Allentown Morning Call. That's Mark Wogenrich. Mark, how you been?
That's a too kind of an introduction, Steve, but I appreciate it. Thanks very much. How are you?
I'm doing very well, and it was an accurate introduction. Penn State goes out to Iowa City. And essentially, it seems to me, does it the old-fashioned way. How did you view how they played on Saturday night?
Overall, I think in a lot of ways, you know, almost as good as they can, probably. You know, the Maryland game, everything just really went well. This was a game that they had to kind of face some punches in the mouth, face some adversity. Sean Clifford did not have his best start, but I watched his progression through the game, and as kind of harried and flustered as he looked in the beginning of the game, that's as poised as he looked at the end. The little move that he made on that third down play to get 11 yards when he needed 10 was just right. I think he had some pretty good reads, I think, in some of those running plays, and they ran, I think, like a dozen times in a row in the fourth quarter, including the touchdown. Most of that, but I think he had some pretty good reads in those situations, especially in the touchdown, on Kane's touchdown. That looked like a good read at that end to give it out to Kane to get outside to score. With that, so their offense, I think those are 17 really hard-earned points. Defensively, they were lights out, as pretty much they've been all year, and it really doesn't hurt when you're starting your defense, inside the opponent's 20, inside the opponent's 10. And then that's as good as I think I've seen Blake Gillikin look this year, as consistently good, which was really curious, because he got kind of a twisted move in the first half when he went down. Right. With tangled with Mike Miranda and the defender, and you thought, is he even going to punt again? Because the way he was walking off the field and walking on the sideline, he comes back, and that second half, he put 3 inside the 10-yard line. That was really decisive too.
No question about it. When you look at how they closed the game, the final 2:31, they closed the game on their terms. What does that tell you about progress with the offense and maybe with the program?
Well, and that was one of the things James Franklin said after the game that I asked him about, again, as a follow-up yesterday, was how they had changed their running game, studied their running game in the offseason. And this is outside of the fact that the number of backs they're using. I think this is just looking at, what James Franklin said, this was looking at the structure of their running game. He said they thought they were too conventional and that they didn't have enough diversity in their run game, being just primarily kind of a power, a power run team. So I asked him then about that yesterday, and he said, they added, obviously the toss play was a big one. They're using counter plays, things that they've just grown into, I think, maybe just added some stuff in the off season, and they showed it on that last series. Blocked it up really well. You saw a couple of plays with linemen pulling, doing stuff that you haven't seen as much. The toss out to Kane, out to Noah Kane, was a huge play, and they hadn't necessarily, that I can remember, even going back to with the Fiesta Bowl, when they had a really nice series, ended up having to punt it away, but had a good long 8-minute drive or whatever that was to use a lot of clock in the fourth quarter. And I remember them doing them as much in the fourth quarter. And I honestly, we were talking about it. When's the last time you saw a Penn State quarterback kneel a game out? That was a one possession game. It's been a while. So that was huge. James Franklin said it was a critical moment. He repeated the word critical again in his 6 years that they were able to finish that out. And Michael Bennett after the game said the same thing. I think he's been really good, as the line has become much more assertive over the course of this season. So I think the scoring drive that preceded it, and then that 2.5-minute drive were real telling points that I think they're getting their act together in the run game.
So halfway through the season, do you have a feel, Mark, for how good this team is, or is it still that work in progress to let us know?
Yeah, I'm not sure I do. I think they're better than I thought would be the case. I mean, the schedule that still lines up in front of them, I think, is their, you know, the remaining opponents have a 600 winning percentage or even higher or something. I'm not exactly sure of the number, but I thought it was something like 26-7 or something like that. So, I mean, they got to get behind or, you know, get in front of some really good teams coming out. One thing, though, and I went into the season thinking that, wondering whether this would be an issue, the number of players they lost in the offseason through transfers and heading to the NFL, I didn't know how much that would affect them on the field. You always lose guys in the NFL who are really good. You expect that. And guys who transfer, you know, sometimes you don't, they're transferring for a reason, because they're going to play somewhere else. They're not going to get the playing time here. So maybe you don't expect the issues or the playing time situation to matter. But I thought, that's a lot of guys to lose. It's a lot of older players to lose. And a lot of, you know, got a lot of those guys who had graduated, veterans, you know, they could, you know, walk the younger players through how things are supposed to go. You know, so I thought that might be an issue. And, you know, I thought maybe that the locker room would be changing. Maybe it'd be too young, and maybe they wouldn't be able to handle as much so soon. But, you know, talking to the players, and, you know, Coach James Franklin has mentioned it, that he thinks the locker room's in a better place. These guys seem to be, again, they seem to be, not that they're, you know, generating any better, like, locker room vibes or anything like that than in the past, but it just seems to be more cohesive to me. I don't know that I'm viewing that from a different perspective, looking from the outside, but I thought that would have more of an impact than it seems to be having so far. The loss of the players, I mean.
Yeah, it's interesting when you, but when you look at the defense, Mark, I'm sure like many, you had you opened the door for the possibility of high expectations.
Sure.
What have you seen to this point that has met those expectations?
Oh my gosh, all of it. I mean, I think they had incredibly high expectations. We heard all spring and summer about how this is the fastest and most athletic defense they've had. And I see that on paper. I see that from the recruiting aspect of it. But I still thought, okay, you know, this can't be as good as they're saying. They can't be as fast as they're saying. They can't be as deep as they're saying, and they can't be as athletic they're saying. And after watching them through six games, go, yeah, they kind of can. There are times when I'm watching the game and I don't notice the changes as much. You don't see the drop off in play that you would notice with, like, all the substitutions. They make so many substitutions. I mean, sometimes just some of those earlier games, like hockey line changes especially on the defensive line. And you're looking at this and go, oh, wait a minute, there's P.J. Mustipher, for instance, or there's Ellis Brooks, or, you know, there's Jaquan Brisker in the secondary, there's the freshman cornerbacks. And that's kind of thing you would say, you would notice that because you might see a slip of a play here or there, or you might see somebody getting beaten, or you might see a linebacker getting blocked out of them. You just don't see it as much. You notice that, oh, there, you know, here comes a big play. Oh, that was Jason Oway who made that big play. That was P.J. Mustipher who really got in the backfield and got some pressure. That was Ellis Brooks and, you know, Brandon Smith and all these guys. Their waves keep coming, and they don't appear to drop off. You know, they got some, you know, Jesse Luketa played really well in Micah Parsons' absence. When he, you know, the targeting call at Maryland is, you know, out for 3.5 quarters. Basically, that's been something that I think has exceeded expectations, is that with the number of players that they're getting in there, you don't see the productivity drop off.
See, I thought that the Luketa moment was the moment that really galvanized it, because that's been typical of what's happened. In other words, Penn State 1-11, I think defensively is really good. And the key to me is 12-22, they're really good too. And I think that's the difference, right there.
Yeah, and they're playing 12-22. You know, they're playing, 12-25. Right. When you get to the defensive line, that's what you've always seen that, obviously, you know, with Coach Spencer and Coach Franklin, especially in the defensive line with those rotations. But I can't remember, as you said, through the 22 being as consistent as they are.
So let's get to Michigan for a moment. How much have you seen of them, and if you have seen some of them, Mark, what kind of read do you have on what is a 5-1 team?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I sat down on the bye week to watch Michigan, Wisconsin. Looking forward to that. And at halftime, I went to mow the lawn. I thought, wow, that's a disaster.
Yeah, that says everything.
And that is, I mean, that's a gauge that's hard to make because Wisconsin looks like it's just absolutely phenomenal this year. Yeah. That on both sides of the ball, they just appear to be doing exactly what they want to do whenever they want to do it. I haven't seen a lot of Michigan's the three games after that Wisconsin game, but they seem in some ways to kind of mirror what Penn State has done. You've got the big blowout. Penn State's with over Maryland and Michigan over Rutgers. Got that grind out game, you know, just the low scoring, pounded out game against Iowa. And then you've got that game that was it as close as, you know, or was it as much of a blowout as the score indicated? You know, Penn State's over
right.
Purdue, and they took the huge lead, but it kind of offensively kind of solved it, you know, and the defense really just took apart a flailing offense. And that seemed to be what happened last week with Michigan and Illinois. They got a lead, and then mm-hmm. Illinois kind of climbed back into it, got it to a possession. Michigan got I think they got another score to tack onto it. Their run defense seems to be, if it's not as good as Penn State, still pretty darn good. I mean, I think, what, about 100 yards rushing in the last 3 weeks, 110 yards rushing, something like that. And it sounds like, from at least what Jim Harbaugh said this week, that they're going to get a couple of guys back that they missed last week, Illinois and Levert Hill and Quiddy Pay, and those are they're big-time players. Yep. So those guys back. Penn State again. I'm looking at can they get is 20 points, 21 points going to be enough to win? It might be. I think there's a fascinating subplot with Josh Gattis, obviously, and him coming back being on the other side, and just what that means. I mean, what he knows of how the staff operates, and then how Brent Pry. What he knows of Josh and how he operates and how that's going to inform the way the guys coach and whether it does at all. It's going to make something. It's going to make a difference in some way. We probably won't know because we don't really ever talk about it, but that to me is a very interesting element of this.
All right. What will be a couple things that you look for, Mark, on Saturday night that you think will end up being swing moments?
One thing Jim Harbaugh said, and again, I haven't seen six games in the schedule, so I couldn't possibly make this judgment, but he said that Chafe Patterson has been the best quarterback on the field in each of the games they've played. I'll take him at his word for that. If that happens again, that'll be definitely a swing moment. Can Penn State, can they run the ball as successfully overall in the big picture as they did last week? I don't know that it matters necessarily who. And Noah Kane, obviously, it looks like he's their guy to finish a game, but you don't start a game in your four-minute offense, so that doesn't necessarily mean he has to start. But do they go to him a little earlier? Do they go to him maybe a little more in the first half if they want to run some of those drives and play another defense field position thing? Or are they going to, are they going to go with that man, the man coverage that Michigan likes to play and let their receivers kind of rip and go? A healthy Justin Shorter, I think, has a real good opportunity in this game. He's been open, I think, the last couple of weeks. When he's been playing, healthy Justin Shorter, I think, could be kind of a swing player in this one.
Well, I mean, let's go back to the Patterson comment for a moment. Okay, they played Middle Tennessee, so he would be the best.
Yes.
Okay. I'm just trying to go through it honestly here. Army, they attempted four passes.
Right.
Okay. Next, Jack Cohn of Wisconsin. Okay. All right. Next up, Rutgers. Insert name of quarterback here. Illinois.
And yeah, Sikowski was redshirting by then, right?
He was redshirting, yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. Then Illinois. So he's going to be the best quarterback there. You can debate between he and Nate Stanley.
Right.
It's not exactly as if he has been pushed by Tua Tagovailoa.
That's true. And that's why I said, that's one thing Jim Harbaugh said, so... the curve grade he's going to put them on is probably pretty lenient.
I'm not trying to put him down here, Mark.
Sure,
I'm just saying that let's be honest in the conversation. Okay, let's take it game by game, and yes, he's probably right, but it also doesn't mean the bar is up here at the top of the roof.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of what I was trying to say, is that the bar gets higher. Everyone would say that. With Sean Clifford, the bar absolutely gets higher. I mean, no matter the issues he's had with be they the starts that he's had, or maybe some of the deep balls, or whatever it may be, I think overall he has been about as good as you could possibly hope for a first-year guy. Through six games, and he gets better in game. That's one thing I've noticed, is that in games he's getting better from first quarter to fourth quarter.
Mark Wilgenrich, Allentown Morning Call. We'll come back with more in a moment. Next half hour will be Neil Coulon. Final half hour, Sam Fortier, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Hey, can we get something straight here so everybody understands this? I was talking about Sean about this during the break. You have people out there right now, not a lot, but some people, telling you who the officials are going to be this week, or better yet, who's going to be the official for the Ohio State game next month. Nobody knows who the officials are going to be until the day of the game. We used to know a couple of days ahead of time. Now, in basketball, they usually get a couple weeks where they know maybe a week or two ahead of time. In basketball, there's so many games, they have to schedule it up. But in football, they don't usually let anybody know who's doing the game until they get into town on Friday. And even then, James Franklin does not find out until Saturday when he's in the locker room and they tell him who it is, and the officials come in to talk to him briefly.
I was on a Penn State fan football page on Facebook last night, and someone kicked around that question. There's got to be a website where we can find out which referees are in charge of all these Big Ten games ahead of time. Like they want to know where John... It's like, where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? Where in the world is John O'Neill going to be next?
Right. And we don't know in the broadcast booth until they hand us the sheet of paper or card before the game. And it's not like right before kickoff. I think I get the, 45 minutes to an hour before kickoff, we have it. We have like all the officials. I mean, the referee right on through the replay, all right, group. So we get the whole thing, so we know who it is. That's why I'm able to say, and Dan Capron has our call, or Mike Cannon has the call, or John O'Neill, or whomever it may be, Jerry McGinn. Because we mentioned them on the broadcast, because that's who's speaking. You should know who's speaking. But we don't know until then. So if anybody out there that is telling you that they know ahead of time, I can tell you in no uncertain terms, is flat out lying to you. And I'll be honest with you, anybody who's posting stuff like that or saying stuff on the air, where they're just making it up, all right, your respect level for them should drop exponentially right away. They're just trying to stir things up. We don't know until they tell us. When I walk in the booth, actually, like this week will be 6, so I'll probably walk in the booth around 5, record what I have to. I still don't have the piece of paper or the card yet. When I come back from the pregame show, it's there waiting for me. That's when I find out. Now, if you think you know ahead of us, you're way better than we are.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.